Now from the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Wednesday, November 6th.
New Mexico's insurance superintendent is advising all insurers and insurance-related entities operating in the state that they must treat equally and without discrimination all parties holding valid marriage licenses. Such people, irrespective of gender, are eligible for all federal marriage discounts and benefits. The order, signed by Insurance Superintendent John Franchini, goes on to say that failure to comply is an unfair business practice and a violation of New Mexico law and the insurance code. The Legislative Behavioral Health Subcommittee on Tuesday heard from health professionals and clients upset about the disruption of services resulting from the state's investigation into allegations of fraud. The Human Services Department in June suspended Medicaid payments to 15 providers while the investigation continues. State Auditor Hector Balderas told lawmakers New Mexico can do a better job of balancing such investigations without harming beneficiaries.
There's still a considerable amount of questions and concerns about the disruption of services for the most vulnerable class of citizens in the community.
Balderas expects to complete his audit by mid-December. We'll have more of Balderas' comments during the feature segment of At Noon coming up shortly. Santa Fe's assistant city attorney has issued an opinion that municipal candidates cannot use e-signatures, such as those collected at a website, to count toward the mandatory minimum needed to qualify for public campaign financing funds. A memo this week from Assistant City Attorney Zach Chandler indicates such e-signatures would be difficult to verify in the event of fraud allegations. Candidates for mayor must collect 600 $5 contributions to receive public campaign funds. Governor Susana Martinez will deliver keynote remarks to the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce Foundation in Albuquerque later today. The governor will discuss her efforts to strengthen New Mexico's economy. The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce Foundation, along with Wells Fargo and the University of Notre Dame, is conducting a training session in Albuquerque. Also from Governor Martinez, the administration has announced Operation Soundstage, a workshop for veterans interested in pursuing jobs as crew members in the film and television industry. An orientation is set for next Friday, in which the state will reimburse part of the wages of a veteran being trained as a crew member by a film or television production in New Mexico. Santa Fe County Treasurer Patrick Varela has announced that there is a collection scam taking place by phone in the county.
There has been a gentleman identifying himself as Benjamin. He claims that he's from Santa Fe County Social Services. The county does not have a department named that, but he claims that the customer is he's collecting on behalf of the county, and either they're behind or they need to pay immediately with their credit card or their property will be foreclosed on.
Varela says that's untrue and that anyone who's contacted should immediately contact the county attorney's office. The State Game and Fish Department says wildlife poaching appears to be on the rise across the state. Department officials are investigating 22 cases involving elk, deer, and antelope carcasses found headless and left to rot. Department officers are running roadblocks across the state to check for illegal hunting activity and to gather data about harvest success. They are also deploying artificial elk and deer in the field to catch poachers who try to shoot illegally at night or from the road. Game and fish officials say New Mexico has stiffer poaching civil penalties of up to $10,000. Santa Fe police are still seeking a burglary suspect likely sporting one, if not two, black eyes. The would-be burglar attempted to enter a Southside Santa Fe residence through a bedroom window Sunday morning. The man sleeping in the room woke up and began punching the prowler in the face. The prowler fell out the window and fled the scene in a silver Pontiac sedan. Police want to hear from anyone who may have information as to the suspect's identity. Despite recording its lowest attendance level in 10 years, New Mexico State Fair officials say they're pleased. The Albuquerque Journal reports fair attendance dropped nearly 4% compared to last year, but officials are blaming the drop on the 4 days of severe weather during the fair's 12-day run, saying it was likely responsible for the decline. Total attendance at this year's state fair was more than 392,000 people. Weather for Santa Fe, a long stretch of sunny, dry days in store for us. Highs today in the upper 40s, lows tonight in the upper 20s. It'll be a bit warmer tomorrow and Friday with highs in the low 50s and overnight lows near 30 degrees. I'm Tom Tropridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, the Dow currently up 103 points at 15,721, the NASDAQ off 13 at 3,926, and the S&P 500 is up 5. It stands at 1,768. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
The Santa Fe Art Institute presents SFAI 140. One evening, 20 inspiring talks, 140 seconds each. Join SFAI for an evening of creativity and conversations, November 21st, 7 p.m. Learn more at sfai.org or call 424-5050. A message from the tax-exempt Santa Fe Art Institute.
10 minutes past the hour, as at noon, now segues to today's feature stories. On November 19th, Albuquerque voters will go to the polls to vote on banning abortion after 20 weeks of gestation. Joining us to discuss the issue is Juliana Kube, who is a legislative advocate for Planned Parenthood of New Mexico. Juliana, tell us about this, the actual ballot issue.
What's on the ballot is very confusing to voters. They have told us that they find it biased and misleading, and so it's important for your listeners and the folks of New Mexico to understand exactly what it is. This ballot measure bans abortions after 20 weeks. It forces the government to interfere in decisions that should be left to a woman and her doctor. And what a lot of folks don't know is that by banning abortions later in pregnancy in Albuquerque, you ban them statewide, because Albuquerque is the place in New Mexico where women go to seek that medical care.
Now, is it not true that the vast majority of late-term terminations are done for medical reasons?
That's right. The circumstances involved in abortions later in pregnancy often involve heartbreaking circumstances. And we've heard from women who have fetal anomalies in their pregnancy, who have cancer and need to seek chemotherapy and need to have that safe and legal option available to them to end the pregnancy. Women who are pregnant and have toxemia and their own life becomes in danger. So we understand that these pregnancies that we're talking about may often be wanted pregnancies, but something happens along the way, something really tragic happens along the way, and that's the last place that you need to have the government involved. It is the place where you need the patient and the doctor making the best decision for that patient and her family.
Archbishop Sheehan has released a statement saying that these procedures are very painful for the unborn fetus. Has that ever been shown to be true scientifically?
No, it's just not. And that's one of the misleading aspects that we are trying to provide accurate information to the public about. There is absolutely no valid empirical science that shows that a fetus feels pain at 20 weeks. It's just not true. It's just not scientifically true. So it's the type of information, though, that voters are facing when they look at this deceptive ballot. It's the type of information that they're trying to sort through when they're looking at this ballot and trying to figure it out.
Juliana, what would you say is the prevailing mood among the voters in Albuquerque regarding this issue?
Well, we've been talking to thousands, literally thousands of voters. We have hundreds of volunteers that have been calling voters every day from our campaign. And part of the misleading nature of this ballot measure, how it's written, is that they literally get in there and it's so confusing and so biased that they need clear direction if they do not want the government to have any say in these private and and really complicated decisions. And so we literally are explaining you have to vote against this ballot measure in early voting and on November 19th. It's that confusing to people. So we're getting very positive feedback from the voters that we're calling, voters who remember what it was like before Roe versus Wade and don't want to turn back the hands of the clock, voters who are really enraged because of the cost to taxpayers that this is going to result in because this is an unconstitutional measure. And then finally, voters who know a friend, a sister, a mother, an auntie who have been in these really difficult and heartbreaking situations where there's a fetal anomaly or the health of the mother is at risk.
Is late-term abortion legal in other states, or is the issue on other ballots, as far as you know?
You know, there's confusion about those words, late-term abortion, because they have been used by the opposition to mislead and give inaccurate information. Our courts across the country have not found the measure that's being proposed in this ballot measure, similar measures, to be constitutional. So we expect that this is unconstitutional in our state court and unconstitutional at the federal level. But the problem with waiting for the courts to decide this instead of voting it down at the ballot box is that it then costs the taxpayers an additional up to $1 million for their city dollars to go to defend something that we all know is unconstitutional. And that's what's making the Albuquerque voters so angry about this measure, and that's what's motivating them to get out there and vote against it. One of the things that's motivating them to get out there and vote against it.
Have you seen polling results in Albuquerque?
We expect this to come down to voters who believe strongly that the government does not interfere in this personal decision, voters that do not normally vote in a city election but feel really strongly that the government has no place in this. We expect it to come down to those voters getting out, and those voters will make the difference. Based on our phone calls with voters, it's clear that we can defeat this ballot measure and keep the government out of these personal decisions, but it's going to come down to those folks who don't normally vote in city elections that feel strongly about that. So we're obviously urging them to get out and vote now and in early voting or on November 19th.
Juliana Kube, legislative advocate for Planned Parenthood in New Mexico. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
This week on Today's Youth, Tomorrow's World, we began with a discussion concerning the use of signing statements and executive orders and their impacts on presidential power.
This is continuing our multi-part series on presidential power in America and around the world.
We then switch to a completely different topic, multilingualism and the brain.
So please tune in to Today's Youth, Tomorrow's World on Wednesday, November 6th at 6:30 here on KSFR.
17 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Senator Tom Udall will be in Albuquerque next week hosting a conference on women in the workplace, and he joins us now to discuss that and some other issues. First of all, Senator, tell us about the upcoming conference.
Sure, you bet. This is a conference about women's career success. It's a half-day conference at the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber. The idea is to help women in New Mexico enhance their careers, whether they are starting their own business or wanting to improve their skills or considering a career change. This conference will help guide them in the right direction. And what we're looking at here is personalized skill-building opportunities such as resume and interviewing tips and help with computer skills and online job searching or resources on what it takes to start a successful small business. We're seeing a really overwhelming positive response to this. When I attended the last one, the feedback we got from that one was very, very good. We're in fact already full. We don't have any space, and so due to the high demand, we're working to schedule another conference before the end of the year.
And would you say women are a mostly untapped source of business talent in our state, or have they been adequately involved previously in the marketplace?
I think we need to use our women entrepreneurs and our women employees a lot better. You know, New Mexico economic growth depends on the success of women as job seekers and entrepreneurs. They're changing the face, I think, of America's and New Mexico's economy. And in fact, in the decade leading up to 2016, it's estimated that half of all new workers will be women. And I believe that women-owned businesses are one of the fastest-growing sectors in our economy. So you can see that we gain a lot if we are able to focus on the skills that women need in the workplace and in starting a business, we all benefit.
Anything else you'd like us to know about the Women's Conference?
The final thing I would like to say has to do with the really great organizations supporting us. In addition to the Hispano Chamber, which was a co-sponsor with me last time around, we have representatives from the U.S. Small Business Administration, the South Valley Economic Development Center, the Loan Fund, and an organization called West. These agencies and nonprofit organizations offer many resources to help women in New Mexico, and they'll work in this conference to help maximize those skills and resources and pass them on to the women.
Senator, you have been a champion of the reining in of the filibuster as a stalling technique used on the Senate floor. It now seems to be coming back. Any comments on that?
We have had several very lively discussions in our caucus here in Washington. We're very disturbed with our friends on the other side reneging on their deal about only objecting to judge appointments and to executive appointments to the president's administration unless there were extraordinary circumstances. We thought we had that deal. The last time around, we came very close to changing the rules, and then they allowed all seven of the individuals to pass through. Well, now they're holding up circuit court judges and several other nominees. And so we're back again at the point where I think we're going to have to take a real hard look at the rules. Senator Reid has expressed a frustration with this. People have seen him talking about this on many of the shows that are out there. And I think people should just stay tuned because something significant may happen here very quickly.
Why do you think your colleagues on the other side of the aisle continue to use the filibuster on all sorts of matters, even after agreeing earlier this year to more restraint?
I don't know about what the motivation is on the other side for slow walking everything and delaying everything, but I can tell you we're going to, as the majority in the Senate, we're going to give everybody a fair hearing, but we want to be able to have the president have his team in place and have judges that are going to be able to deal with those very important justice issues before them.
And one final question for you today, sir. Both you and Senator Heinrich have called for better oversight of surveillance programs. Would you comment on that for us, please?
I think it's really clear that when we passed the Patriot Act, we passed overly broad provisions. Those allowed the NSA and other federal agencies to go way too far in terms of scooping up personal information. There aren't the kinds of oversight that need to be in place. There aren't the kind of protections that we need for privacy and for our constitutional rights. And so I've made a couple of suggestions. Let me tell you about them. They're very common sense. One is in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, we should have someone who's arguing for our rights, the rights of privacy, our constitutional rights. Courts don't do very well when they only hear one side, and that's the way the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court works. So we're proposing a change there. I believe the president supports that change, so that should be something that we would be able to get through rather quickly. I would also like to see us take a really hard look at this, both foreign collection and domestic collection, and the interaction between the two and how that impacts Americans. And so we're going to do that work. I've signed on a bill with Senator Leahy that I think has all of the reforms in it that need to be put in place in the law, and we're happy at a future point to go through all those details with you.
Senator Tom Udall, many thanks for joining us here at noon. And that Women in the Workplace conference that Senator Udall was speaking of takes place next Thursday, November 14th, from 10 to 3 at Albuquerque's Hispano Chamber. And the senator has posted more information on it at his website, tomudall.senate.gov/women-success. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
The Lenzic proudly presents National Theater Live, 50 years on stage, broadcast in high definition on November 12th. Celebrate 5 decades of Britain's national theater with scenes from its greatest plays and a cast of award-winning actors from Derek Jacobi to Judi Dench. For tickets to National Theater Live, 50 years on stage, in HD at the Lenzic, call 988-1234 or visit TicketSantaFe.org. The Lenzic is a nonprofit, member-supported organization.
24 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Unemployment, the numbers associated with the topic, though improved since the worst of the Great Recession, still remain a scar on the economy. While statistics show both the nation and the state moving in a healthier direction, recovery is not as robust as it might be. The latest verified data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics says that the country's unemployment rate is at 7.2% for the period up to September 30th. New Mexico as a state fares better with the rate pegged at 6.8%, yet that represents more than 62,000 New Mexicans out of work. And here in Santa Fe, the unemployment rate for the period ending August 31st was 5.2%. The search for work, though not as difficult as in the worst of recent years, still remains a task fraught with hopes and disappointment. KSFR's Joe Day has been in the state employment office here in Santa Fe and files this report.
I'm Joe Day, and I'm in downtown Santa Fe at the office of the Santa Fe Workforce Connection. Basically, it's the state's employment office here, and it could be called the front lines of New Mexico's effort to find jobs for people. I spoke with Elizabeth Romero, whose job it is to connect job seekers and employers.
I go out and meet with the business owners of Santa Fe, tell them about the services that we have to offer them, that is available to them because of their the taxes that they have already paid into the system. These services are available to them. We want them to be successful, and if there are any job openings in their organization, I'm hoping that they would post their jobs with me. Again, that's a free service. And because when we put people back to work, it's good for the company, it's good for the job owner, it's good for the employee, it strengthens our tax base, and it's good for families, and it keeps people rooted in Santa Fe. We have from the highly educated individuals to the individuals that are just starting out and looking for their first job. And because we are in an age where everything is computerized, that's where our jobs are on computer. That's where people apply. It's a little different for the older people that are coming on board because they're used to that face-to-face personal contact. But we try to ease them into the computer as much as we can. I post jobs for free on the state website, which is www.jobs.state.nm.us.
This day, one of many periodic job fairs was being held. The city of Santa Fe had 2 openings for city bus drivers and 2 for car or van drivers, primarily to transport elderly people in the city. Ben was one of those applying.
You have a family?
I do have a family. I have a son and a girlfriend.
And how have you been surviving?
Right now, it's been day to day. My family members have been helping me out so far with bills and odds and ends, groceries, gas.
The city of Santa Fe is advertising for 2 jobs for bus drivers and 2 jobs for car and van drivers, I guess for the elderly. Is that a kind of thing you'd think you'd like to do?
Yes, I would. It's something different, get to be out on the road and just meet different people, and it would be nice, yeah. I would like it.
Are you pretty optimistic?
Yes, I am.
It must be pretty tough to go for a period of months without a job. I mean, it must be not only physically, supplying food for your family and stuff, but it must Does it prey on your mind a little bit too?
It takes a toll. It does. I think about it all the time.
Richie was also here seeking a job.
What kind of work are you looking for?
Well, I'm actually kind of open to anything, and well, not anything, but I'm open. I'm just sort of reinventing myself at the moment. Yeah, looking for a new direction.
Have you found it difficult to find a job that you feel you would be interested and suited for?
Yeah, I mean, my orientation's always been self-employment, so I've been self-employed, you know, most of my life, but that takes a lot more effort to get going, and I'm in that.
And it takes money, too.
Yeah, and I'm in that process now here. It's going a little slow. I actually came here because there's this program, it's a federal program where they pay for your retraining.
Elizabeth Romero.
Speaking of the people who do come in here, I imagine they come here with all different kinds of emotions, too.
Yes. People who are eager to start their first job, they're happy, they're motivated, they're enthused. To the people that have are very emotional, they've either lost their job through no fault of their own, or their circumstances in their personal life have changed, so they need a job as quickly as possible. So the emotions run high, and the important thing is that we try to calm them down to the point where they're composed enough to compose a resume.
I'm here with a couple who is seeking jobs. First of all, Ian, tell me about what you're looking for and what your situation is.
I'm just kind of looking for maintenance or general labor or something like that. I have a wife and a child to take care of and an apartment to pay for. You know what I mean?
Allison, you're also seeking a job. What kind of a job would you like to get if you could?
Pretty much anything, like a dishwasher or a cashier or something. I've done jobs before, like fast food restaurants and stuff, so something in that area.
You all have a child. How are you getting along? How are you managing?
I think we're doing okay for the moment. And
you have any help from family at all?
Yeah, my dad helps us out. And then she, you know, gets assistance from the state, but it's not much.
Yeah, so we're trying to better ourselves by trying to look for work.
For KSFR News, this is Joe Day reporting.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Academy for the Love of Learning, presenting Life is What You Make It, a thought-provoking and inspiring concert and conversation with Peter Buffett, November 7 at the Linzik Performing Arts Center. The Academy for the Love of Learning's mission is to awaken, enliven, nurture, and sustain the natural love of learning in people of all ages. More information at aloveoflearning.org.
32 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. At the state capitol Tuesday, a legislative panel heard testimony from the state officials regarding the Human Services Department's actions investigating fraud allegations against behavioral health providers receiving Medicaid. Following those allegations, the HSD back in June suspended Medicaid payments to the providers. Joining us once again is KSFR's Tom Trowbridge. And Tom, I understand that State Auditor Hector Balderas testified before a legislative committee. His office has been investigating the matter. Did he indicate just when the audit report that he's working on would be released?
Yes, Dan, he did. I spoke with Auditor Balderas after his testimony, as you'll hear in my report. State Auditor Hector Balderas expects to complete his audit on the issues raised by HSD's allegations by mid-December. He says the work is a time-consuming process, partly because the auditor's office has to abide by a number of federal guidelines.
The federal government requires HSD to have certain processes and procedures in place in how they determine whether or not they've thoroughly looked at a credible allegation of fraud, and also they are required to have a procedure and process in place in which they are trying to safeguard the Medicaid funds at the state level. And it's our job as auditors to test those federal regulations and ensure that HSD did a decent job in how they determine what a credible allegation of fraud is and whether or not they had adequate procedures in place to safeguard Medicaid funds.
Balderas says legislators presented him with a number of questions regarding the decision-making process at the Human Services Department.
Related to the way in which HSD procured the audit firm of which they're relying upon, and that has been a considerable source of controversy because many leaders and many members of the press have wanted to review the audit report by which HSD made their suspension decisions and withholding of funds.
Asked about the recent news that two nonprofits that provide behavioral health services have agreed to repay more than $4 million in improper billings, Baldera says the audit will continue and that any such resolution between HSD and providers doesn't impact the outcome of whether the process was correctly followed.
I do welcome, though, the news that there could be some recovery and that there may have been recovery. I have yet to see, though, whether or not that those proceeds that were offered up to HSD actually go to billing errors. And what I understand from the statements is that there were no admissions. So how closely that ties to actual identifiable overbilling, I have yet to look at their test work. And so it's going to be one of the things that we follow up on, is to look at the details of that agreement.
Baldera says state oversight of federal assistance programs should be viewed in a more holistic manner.
Some of the other areas of concern that have really kind of, the door has been opened, is that I think a lot of citizens and lawmakers are starting to now want leaders to look at the overall system of oversight and due process and how they conduct fraud detection. And so, as I stated today in the committee, any type of service can be abused or exploited if it doesn't have strict guidelines, the right professionals, and managers who have to make tough decisions need the best information in place.
And in light of public comment regarding how the disruption of care is hurting New Mexicans, Baldera says he told lawmakers New Mexico can do a better job of balancing such investigations without harming beneficiaries.
Clearly, we all want to mitigate and minimize fraud in New Mexico, but there also seems to be a clear consensus from many sides that there has to be a more efficient way to investigate fraud, provide training, and really ensure that there's no disruption to recipients of services.
New Mexico State Auditor Hector Balderas. For KSFR, I'm Tom Tropridge.
12:36 here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, is the perfect time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I think that if you're going to be a parent, somewhere along the way you should be required to take classes, like heavy-duty parenting classes, say starting at age 11 or 12, and continuing throughout however long your schooling lasts, maybe until you drop out because you either got pregnant or made someone pregnant. Someday I'll weigh in on kids having kids, but for now, in addition to the schooling, I would require a pre-PG test. Not how smart the wannabe parents are, but do they possess the slightest shred of common sense? Herewith, an example of a man who would not have passed the test and thus would not have been allowed to be a parent. Riding his bicycle, of course, and pulling a child carrier behind the bike with a none-too-thrilled-looking toddler in the carrier. And where was this man riding his bike and pulling his child? In the bike lane on Cerrillos Road. Not only would I have forbidden this man from impregnating a woman, I would have prohibited him from having sperm. That won't get us in trouble with the FCC, will it? For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's Extended Noon News Hour. Dan Garrity here at Mike with you, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge, Joe Day, and Charles Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you, and as always, we hope you join us.